Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. There's no business like your business. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank, banking for good. Member FDIC.
Are you ready?
Let's clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
He's gone from suck to blow.
What?
All right, based on yesterday, Mike gave me an assignment, and that's to fix instant replay, to talk about instant replay and the overtime rules. Let's address the overtime rules first, okay? Listen, if you can't stop an offense once you kick off, that's your fault. I don't mind at all the fact that if you score a touchdown on your opening drive, the other team doesn't get to touch the ball. You had an opportunity. You had an opportunity to play defense. That, to me, is just nothing more than a bunch of whiners. If you kick a field goal, if you just limit them to a field goal, you still get an opportunity to come back and win the football game. So the overtime rules don't bother me at all. I like them just the way they are. I wouldn't touch them. I wouldn't mess with them. You know, that's the loser's limp right there. Oh, we never got to touch the ball. We had Patrick Mahomes. Eh, we'll play defense. This is a complimentary football, right? Defense, special teams, offense. It's just not offense. It's just not the Patrick Mahomes show, okay? You got to play all three of them. So that one doesn't bother me at all. As far as instant replay is concerned, I hate the fact that we say, hey, we have instant replay so we can get it right, and yet we still don't get it right. I hate the fact that a coach has to pull the challenge flag out of his sock and throw it on the football field if there's something in question. To me, I hate the histrionics of the official going to the sideline looking at the Microsoft tablet when it's being made, the decision's being made in New York anyhow. I don't understand that. Hey, if you want to sell it and you want to make money off of it, just put what they call a bug or a lower third graphic. This replay brought to you by Microsoft. We don't need to see the tablet. We don't. And just have somebody upstairs go, hey, stop the game. I got to look at this. This one's a close one. We're going to look at this. Hey, this one's going to New York. Like, what's wrong with that? Just slap up a bug or slap up a graphic or whatever the case may be and sell the damn thing. You're still going to make a boatload of money. Come on. That one thing I know you guys know how to do is make a ton of money. Sell it. It's fine. You know, if you want to strap, that means strap a Microsoft tablet on some guy's chest. If you want to, have him walk around the whole game with it. Just a big Microsoft tablet in the middle of...
like a sandwich board.
Yeah, absolutely. Slap it on there. I mean, that's all you got to do, but I just don't think it's that complicated. I really don't. You know, and if you're going to... I mean, I just hate the fact that you can only get it right. Like we want to get it right with this replay, Mike, but only when you have challenge flags. Because if you don't have a challenge flag, then we don't care about getting right. Like, do you understand how incongruent that message is that you send? So I don't think it's that hard. I really don't. But, you know, what the hell do I know? Not a whole lot. Get your cleats off the ground!
That was awesome!
Clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
Let's start with the controversial non-pass interference call. Do you believe that instant replay can cover those kind of calls? Okay, in that case, in that instant, Sean Payton has a challenge. He has a penalty challenge, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Throws out the red flag. Is that something that you feel can be reviewed and everybody can come, you know, we can go with the whole, well, the call on the field was this. So in order to overturn it, it needs to be conclusive evidence. We can play that whole game.
Right.
But can a judgment call be reviewed?
Well, I think that's the issue you get into. Because if you start opening it up that way, Mike, then what else can you open it up to? Is it holding? Do we start calling holding calls? Do we start calling alignment calls?
Can you, what about that? Let's talk about holding calls as an offensive lineman. You know what holding is, and you know what is not holding. You know it's ticky-tack. So,
right.
Wouldn't you be able to look at a holding call that was challenged and say, yeah, I could uphold that, or no, that wasn't a holding call.
Sure.
Overturn.
I would pretty much overturn every one of them, but.
That's true.
Right.
What am I talking to?
I'm not the one that you want in that booth at that time. But, I mean, certainly you can look at those judgment calls. I mean, the one in New Orleans, there's no question you would have, you know, you'd have given that one. I mean, that would have been overturned. Again, how do you miss it? I mean, he hit the guy 6 yards before the ball got there, or 5 yards before the ball. Like, how is that one missed?
It's an incredibly fast game. And these plays can be bang-bang type plays.
Right. That one, not so much, though. Like, that one was so blatant. How do you miss that one? I mean, think about that. Just from the mechanics of... Now, I think the officiating, I think it's incredibly difficult what they ask those guys to do. The other thing, this is another thing I hate about instant replay. The, hey guys, you know what? Swallow your whistles. We'll let instant replay figure it out. Well, then all of a sudden, you know, there's a play that you shouldn't swallow your whistle on. Is that one that you've been influenced by the whole mantra of, hey, let's let instant replay figure it out, and all of a sudden you forgot on that particular one, you swallowed your whistle on that particular one, you're like, oh shoot, should have thrown that flag.
Look, I know it's not perfect, and I know that every time you think that you have instant replay covered, something else pops up, and you're like, oh, maybe we need to add that to instant replay. And you run the risk of this thing being over instant replayed. But we're talking about a Super Bowl berth. We're talking about a career defining, life defining moment right there. And, you know, the analytic guys determined that if pass interference had been called there, the Saints had a 98% probability of winning the football game.
Right.
I mean, that's 98% probability that the Saints go to the Super Bowl, and careers and legacies perhaps are changed. And I just think that for how often these games tend to come down to these kind of calls, we got to do whatever we can to make sure they get it right.
What about the fact that it's just blatantly obvious that we've gotten into the playoffs and the refs have quit calling fouls? All the pass interferences and things you saw during the regular season, I mean, there's no question. Teddy Bruschi, I was following him yesterday on Twitter and on Instagram, how there's a difference between playoff football and even NFC, AFC championship football weekend in the way the officials are called. I always said the thing about Super Bowl 32 that impressed me the most is on our game-winning drive, I think we had two holding calls where we had to overcome two holding calls, I believe, or a holding call and a block in the back or something of that nature. And I thought, that's the way it should be. Like, you should officiate, the game shouldn't be officiated any different just because you're at high stakes and you're in the playoffs. And yet, there's no question they were letting the guys, you know, be a little bit more physical between DB and receiver. And I'm like, either way, I'd much rather be officiated the way it was officiated yesterday. But that should be the way it's officiated all season long.
Now, as to your overtime argument, I see where you're going. It, you know, look, New England put together a 13-play, 75-yard drive to win that game in overtime. They converted one third and 10, two third and 10s, three third and 10s. So I see what you're saying. The argument is that, hey, come on, Chiefs, you had three third and 10s.
Right.
Stop them. Get off the field.
Yeah.
Instead, New England converted three third and 10s, and then they win the football game. But you understand, Tom Brady's 3-0 in overtime playoff games, and in all three instances, the other team never saw the ball.
Win the coin toss. How about that?
Okay, now you got to win the coin toss. All right.
Well, you should. And guess what? New England's defense finds a way in those third and tens to make a play, either get off the field or make you kick a field goal. And then they still get it back to Tom Brady.
I'm not as passionate about the changing the overtime rules as I am about the instant replay stuff.
Right. But do you understand my whole thing about the official running over to the sideline to look at the Microsoft tablet thing? It annoys me. If we're going to get it right, let's get it right all the time. Like, not just when you have a challenge flag.
I wonder how Microsoft felt when Belichick threw his.
They're like, look, man, they didn't even crack.
Look at this thing. takes a licking and keep, well, that one's already been.
He hates Microsoft tablets.
He hates it.
Well,
he despises it. All right. What do we make of the Chiefs after this loss? And how does it impact the Broncos and the AFC West moving forward? That's next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
It's funny, I was talking to a buddy of mine who lives in Kansas City, Mark, and he was saying that the Broncos were invoked a lot last week in KC on their sports talk radio about the idea that, hey, Tom Brady, 0-2 in Denver in AFC championship games. If Denver can do it, we got to do it.
Yeah, that's because we're Denver. You guys are Kansas City.
Well,
so silly.
So what is the takeaway for you with these Chiefs moving forward?
Well,
as it relates to the Broncos and the rest of the AFC West, was this their Jacksonville moment?
That's a great question. That is a great question. And I think, frankly, this is one of the growing pains of a football team that it can either, inspire you to greatness, or it can make you crumble. I mean, it's hard to be the number one overall seed. It's hard to get to that point. When you get to that point, you got a home playoff game and a championship weekend. You got to find a way to win those games, and they certainly couldn't get that done. I think Patrick Mahomes, he missed remember the Williams touchdown on the wheel route that he missed a wide open to the running back? I think he had, I was reading something, he had 6.7 yards of separation. There was a couple of errant overthrows, yet he was still incredible. I guess more than anything, Mike, it just makes you think next 10 years in the AFC West, man, with that dude and the talent they have as a football team, Andy Reid and Teddy Bruschi always called it surviving the first 15 with Andy Reid. The key to the game is can you get through his opening series of plays, the first 15, without being down 14-0?
What did the Patriots do, especially in that first half to Mahomes? It's 14-0.
Uh-huh.
Nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
For that vaunted offense in the first half. What did they do that Vic Fangio can look at and say, all right, there's a bit of a blueprint there that we can expand upon?
Right. Well, what they did was they played cover one a bunch, and the single high safety double teamed Tyreek Hill. So what they ended up doing was saying, hey, we're going to jam you. We're going to play press man. We're going to jam you, and we're going to run with you, disrupt routes, and try to get to your quarterback. We're going to try to bring an extra defender. We're going to run games up front, and we're going to try to disrupt your quarterback. And they were able to do that on a consistent basis. They gave up a few plays. When they did get picked up, the one catch Tyreek Hill had was a 42-yarder where it was a post-corner route. So it's really a double-move type of route, and he was still being double-teamed. He had a corner in trail that jammed him and a safety over the top. It was just a beautiful throw and a beautiful route. But other than that, the guy had three targets on the day. And then Travis Kelce had some drops, what ended up hurting them, a couple of drops, and the rest is history. They did a great job of pressuring Mahomes in certain situations. And then, Tony Romo brought it up in the game, in a critical situation, not until the second half did they bring zero coverage, like all out blitz where they had more guys coming than you had, guys blocking. But they did that consistently in the first half of their first matchup where they grew a big lead. They didn't do that yesterday until a critical situation deep in the third quarter. So just changing things up, creating opportunities, developing a pass rush, like a pass rush plan, They did all those things exceptionally well on the defensive side of the ball to slow the Chiefs down.
So I've somewhat joked, it's kind of like, you know, whistling past the graveyard joke, that, okay, you know, Broncos, Raiders, Chargers, you know, who do you want to be? Do you want to be the Bills, the Dolphins, or the Jets for the next decade and a half, right?
Right.
I've said that somewhat jokingly, but did you come away from yesterday, especially watching, as much as they shut him out, he certainly started to figure out in the second half.
Sure.
And when you figure out how Patrick Mahomes will only probably learn from all of this and figures to get better, he seems to be made of the right stuff. Do you look at these next decade and a half with a certain amount of dread?
Sure.
I mean, even in defeat.
Yeah. I mean, even if you look at Tom Brady, you know, what Tom Brady was when he first came in the league compared to what he is now and his mastery at the line of scrimmage. The other thing is, there is no, and I'm not saying that Mahomes is based out of ego because I don't believe that he is, but how Tom Brady just will be just fine taking what the defense gives him and dumping it to running backs, and that those things don't bother him, you know? And there were a lot of opportunities to dump the ball underneath where Patrick Mahomes was taking the shot. And, you know, when you hit those things, man, you put up big points and great things happen to you. But had you been more consistent dumping the ball down and taking the underneath or intermediate routes, you probably would have had a little bit more success in that first half. He had 32 total yards in the first half. 32 yards.
Help me out with this one, because they always say this about Belichick. He'll take away what you like to do best. He's going to determine that this guy's not going to beat you, right? Mm-hmm. And that was Tyreek Hill. And Tyreek Hill did not beat them. One catch for 42 yards, only three targets. How is it then that, in this case, Kansas City and their defensive coordinator, Bob Sutton, when Tony Romo is on television saying, this is where the ball's going, folks. Look at Gronkowski. He's now lined up wide. When he's lined up wide, look for the fade route. And especially on that overtime drive, you knew the ball was going to Julian Edelman.
Right.
You knew it. Everybody knew it. And yet on third and 10, Brady to Edelman for 20 yards. Another third and 10, Brady to Edelman for 15 yards. How is it that you don't know and you don't take that away?
Well,
or you do know
one,
and you don't take it away. Even worse.
Yeah, you try to take it away. The Patriots did a great job, one, motioning Edelman into the formation to get a stack release, meaning, you know, they're running interference for you. So the top receiver, the guy in front, is running the interference to make sure that you get instant separation. And then two, their offensive line dominated. I mean, Tom Brady, you know, didn't even get sniffed. And the one time he did, you know, he got a penalty flag, which was a phantom call for helmet, you know, a helmet hit.
Mm-hmm.
So when you, again, you dominate the line of scrimmage, guess what happens? You win. I mean, it's rang true. If Denver needs to learn anything, about their football team, the teams that dominated the line of scrimmage, especially on the offensive side of the ball, won every playoff game. Every single one.
C.J. Anderson's going back to the Super Bowl, and he had a message for John Elway last night. You'll hear it in Four Down Territory next.
Be quiet, I'm answering the question.
This is Four Down Territory.
Let's talk football.
Personal file, 69, offense. He's giving them the business.
That guy's pretty good. If you like 6'5", 230-pound quarterbacks, laser, rocket arms.
It's my quarterback. And if you guys do that, man, it's unfair.
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Chicken parm, you taste so good.
Ready, Fred. First down.
Brady under center. A give to Burkett. Runs it left for the win. Touchdown, Patriots. And they're bound for Super Bowl 53.
What a call, Sosie. We're going back, baby. And there ain't nothing you can do about it. America's worst nightmare is back. We're going to our fourth Super Bowl in 5 years. Pack your bags. Start our buses. We're coming home, Boston.
And that is why America hates the Patriots. But here they are again, back in a Super Bowl for the third straight year, fourth time in the last 5 years. You know my mantra. Coaching matters, players matter more. And I thought that that was certainly on display in the fourth quarter, where a whopping 38 points were scored between those two teams. The game plans had sort of been figured out. The adjustments had been made. And then guys were just going out and balling, making unbelievable plays. But to the matter of coaching, you and I were just talking about this during the break. Boy, if I'm in Kansas City talking about this right now, I'm all over Andy Reid for his acceptance that the Patriots were determined to take Tyreek Hill out of the game. And he was almost okay with it. The idea that, okay, fine, you want to double up Tyreek Hill? I'll let him be a decoy all game long, and I'll win with advantages elsewhere on the field. Come on, he's your best player. You've got to find ways to get him the ball.
Well, I was surprised they didn't use him in the screen game more. Yeah. They had a bunch of jet sweep stuff. I'm surprised they didn't, because he's so dynamic with the run after the catch stuff. So I agree with that part of it. The other part that I would say is, man, he is getting double teamed all the time. What does that mean? You got one-on-ones all over the place. Travis Kelce should have had a much bigger impact in that game. He had a couple of drops. I don't think he played very well. So he should have a much larger impact within that game, and he just flat didn't. And Gronkowski, for all those rumors about Gronkowski, you know, being finished and being dead, the impact that dude has as a complete football player, not only running the slant game or running the fade game, having some catches early in that game, but what he does on the line of scrimmage blocking dudes, he was incredible.
I'm going to bring this up because I know you're going to be using it on national TV this week. So let it just be said. What did I tell you all season long when people were writing the obituary on Tom Brady? I said, this is a guy who is going to use the regular season self-preservation mode. He's going to avoid taking any kind of hits. He's going to look skittish at times. He's going to throw the ball in the dirt. He's going to look like he's afraid to take a hit. And it's all about saving himself for the playoffs. And what has he done in two playoff games? He doesn't look 41, does he?
Well, he hasn't been hit in two playoff games. So, I mean, that part's been, they've been exceptional. But, yeah, he is. I mean, the dude's just flat out a goat. You can't even have that argument. Who's the greatest of all time? It's Tom Brady.
Next in four down territory.
Second down.
103 decibels, and they're just getting started as Zuerlein sets up for a 57-yard try to win the NFC Championship game. The hold is down. The kick clears the line, and Greg Zuerlein sends the Rams to the Super Bowl!
Rams radio. Well, I guess if yesterday was pure torture for Bronco fans, who do you pull for? The Patriots or the Chiefs? At least now it'll be easy, right? It should be easy, right?
Sure.
In the Super Bowl, the Rams with Stan Kroenke, the owner. He also owns the Avs and Nuggets. Mm. You got Wade Phillips. You got Aqib Talib. You got C.J. Anderson. Or can you root for C.J. Anderson? After Anderson saw a Denver reporter in the locker room after the game and said, hey, tell John Elway, ha-ha.
Oh,
and you know there was a lot of blowback
that makes
to CJ on that one.
That makes me root for him even harder. I love that. Good for him.
The inevitable backlash. I got this on the RamosLaw.com text line. If CJ would have ran that hard here, we wouldn't have had to get rid of him. Mm. Whoa, 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 whoa. His last year in Denver was a career year for CJ Anderson. He played in all 16 games. He ran for 1,000 yards, averaging 4.1 yards per carry. It was after that year that the Broncos decided to cut ties with him.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't leave as a free agent.
No, no.
They got rid of him.
Right, they said, see you around sometime, hope it works out for you. Good for CJ Anderson, man. And yeah, there have been a question a time or two, or there have been a few questions a time or two about, his level of fitness or whatever, but that's, he's just got that dad bod. That's what he's got. And I tell you what, he uses it to perfection. I mean, he's been nothing short of amazing throughout this run. Like, he's the guy that got the Rams running game back on track. And yesterday, he was the guy that usurped Todd Gurley, who was, struggling catching the ball and obviously still has some lingering knee injuries. that are going on, even though the Rams aren't really reporting it. So good for C.J. Anderson. I'm happy for him.
Next in four down territory.
Third down.
I think, you know, when you got 70,000 people cheering against you, it's pretty sweet when you went on the road. And it's a hard thing to do in the NFL. It's certainly a hard thing to do against the first ranked team, you know, in a conference who's been playing great all year and certainly play well at home.
The overtime period personifies what this team's really all about. Defense gets a turnover. Jared makes an unbelievable play. And then Greg the Leg delivers in a big way.
Well, there is Tom Brady and Sean McVay. That sets up Super Bowl 53. The Patriots are an early 1.5-point favorite. I'll allow you the freedom to change, but right now your early pick to win is home.
I'd take New England.
Why so emphatic?
I love Tom Brady.
But McVay. To McVay.
Yeah, McVay. Correct. How about Ood McDaniels and Ood McBelichick?
A little bit too much for even the great McVay to overcome.
It's gonna be phenomenal. It's gonna be a great game. I will tell you this. I'll give a little bit of hope to Rams fans. And I'm excited about the Rams because love a lot of the players. My college teammate Eric Yarber coaches their wide receivers, so I'm really I'm University of Idaho. Obviously, I'm really excited about that aspect of it. Having talked to several coordinators over the years about the Broncos and Mike Shanahan and the mastery of Bill Belichick, if you will. They have never defended the zone run system very well. And I've told you the story about, you know, about being pulled aside, you know, and asked to do a 2-hour tutorial on how we run the zone by Eric Mangini. That's something that they've always struggled with in the play action off of that. So that's what the Rams base themselves out of. That part will be really interesting to me.
Well, we will be live from Radio Row next week. Look forward to that. Our coverage next week in Atlanta, thanks to BlueChew.com. So that'll be a lot of fun as we chop it up with all kinds of NFL people next week from Atlanta. Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
I appreciate the courage of our players throughout the course of the season, right up to the last play. And I think, you know, if you want to write a book about this season, probably no one would believe it. And not just this season, go back a year. You know, the days are long, but the years are short. And just 1 year ago, we were in this exact same place, and our guys fought through all of that.
Well, there's John Harbaugh. I bring this story up as the extension between Harbaugh and the Ravens is done. And with all those rumors that were floating around that perhaps the Ravens would look to trade John Harbaugh and that the Broncos were very interested. I heard from people who claimed themselves to be in the know that said, oh yeah, the Broncos are going hard after Harbaugh. Well, it does not appear that that was the case. And part of the reason why I resisted really jumping into this story was you had just done a Ravens game like 2 weeks prior and you were insistent based on your conversations with John Harbaugh that he was going nowhere.
Yeah, that he was going to get his deal done. I mean, it was what they were able to do and the switch they made mid-season to Lamar Jackson and that just the unique, you know, offensive game plan that was what the Baltimore Ravens were running. I just didn't think there's any way they're going to let John Harbaugh go. I mean, he's a phenomenal head coach. So, it turns out that they got him done and they got him extended and, you know, and the rest is history. He's a great coach.
That'll do it for Four Down Territory, our tour around the NFL. What can the Broncos learn from what we watched yesterday from the Final Four? We'll talk with our Bronco insider, Troy Rank, coming up next. Hook up here with our buddy Troy Rank here in just a second. A lot of great reaction pouring in to what went down yesterday on our RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. The fact that Bronco fans rooted for a division rival is disgusting. I'm now a KC fan.
Okay. What?
Seems like, the idea that you would have rooted for the Chiefs yesterday instead of the Patriots.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. There's just no way I could bring myself to root for Kansas City. And Mahomes is a great story, and Andy Reid, I love Andy. He's a great guy. I'm sorry. There's no way I'd rather root for the evil empire.
Really, Mark? CJ Anderson is garbage. He almost blew the game for the Rams. He fumbled the ball, but he recovered it. Good riddance to rubbish. Adam from Denver.
Yeah, okay. Well, you can watch him in the Super Bowl. That garbage. By the way, that garbage single-handedly turned them back on the right track, getting their running game going when Todd Gurley was hurt. And I think yesterday was probably the first game that he didn't have 100 yards plus in that he's played. So, if that's the way you want to divvy it up or whatever, that's your prerogative.
Look, the Broncos were absolutely correct in letting CJ Anderson go. Right? He was an undrafted free agent running back.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who they replaced him with? Another undrafted free agent running back. And they really didn't miss a beat at all. In fact, I would argue that Phillip Lindsay was far more impactful for this offense this past year. He was clearly its MVP than CJ ever was. And I like CJ Anderson. His was a good story, but you know, he got over 1,000 yards once, and 1,000 yards isn't what it used to be. Okay, he had 1,007 yards as his career high with the Broncos. He was set to make like $4 million the next year. The Broncos would have been stupid to take a position that is literally a dime a dozen position, like running back in the NFL, where clearly you can find very productive guys and not even have to draft them.
Mm-hmm.
There was no reason for them to pay him that kind of money. So, and look, it's not like he immediately went somewhere else and
right, and had
conclusively
all kinds of,
yeah. showed the NFL that the Broncos were wrong. He got cut by the Panthers. He got cut right. by the Raiders.
Well, he got cut by the Panthers, though. Understand that that Christian McCaffrey had 97%+, 98% of all plays. He ran 98% of their plays, which I think the next closest running back was, I want to say, Ezekiel Elliott at about 80-something, 88 or 89. So unheard of to have that many snaps. So C.J. Anderson just wasn't getting any run in Carolina. They cut him. Then the Raiders cut him. You know, he went back home, never got to carry the ball. The Raiders cut him. But, you know, the Raiders. I mean, they're just a train wreck. So I think it's cool that he got an opportunity. He's making the most of his opportunity. Why would you have a problem with that?
Another one here. Did Evans ask McVay out and get turned down? He sounds like a spurned girlfriend. I love McVay. I just think it's kind of ridiculous, sad, pathetic. It shows a lack of independent thinking by these NFL teams that there seems to be such a rush to find the next McVay. So much so that anybody who even has been in the same room as McVay automatically gets a coaching job. You know, it's this herd mentality. It's the copycat nature of the NFL that takes a guy who has been very successful, but you know, he's in a Super Bowl, but you know, can he win a playoff game or two before everybody around the NFL decides we have to get a guy that has picked up the scent of McVay?
Yeah, that part doesn't bother me. You know what bothers me?
Come on, we got quarterback coaches getting NFL right. head coaching jobs.
What bothers me, Mike, is that you diminish the leadership qualities of Sean McVay. Like, if you sit there and say, well, that guy rubbed up against Sean McVay, he's going to be Sean McVay. Like, you're too stupid to actually sit down and have a conversation and realize the man that Sean McVay is, the leader that he is, you don't see the whole package. That's what bothers me more than anything is you're diminishing that dude. What do I always say? There's two types of people. Those who energize the room when they walk into it and those who energize it when they walk out. That dude walks in, man, and he's different. And like to diminish the leader that he is. I think that's the thing that irritates me about people.
That's fair.
Right?
That's fair. That everyone is just looking at the X's and O's and not realizing.
Yeah, there's.
I mean, you think about. I came away with a whole new level of respect for Jared Goff yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Because I kind of sarcastically, shades of John Fox, like, whoa, a little louder in here than we thought it would be. I texted you, boy, were McVay and the Rams prepared for the sound of the dome?
Yeah.
And you texted me back and you said, what?
You can't prepare for it. Like, they said, hey, we're going to run. And the same thing New England said, hey, we're going to run. Like, I think one of the things you have to be able to do, Mike, is you have to have a bunch of call and run up plays. Right? So you're going to walk up and you're going to snap the ball. You've got to be able to do that. Really hard to get off on the snap count and run the football effectively. New England did it. Goes to show you how bad Kansas City is at defending the run. Because they just walked up there and they were in the huddle and they extended snap counts and they got rid of it. But Kansas City wasn't nearly as loud as that dome was. I mean, that dome was just ungodly loud. And you're right, Jared Goff, like, they couldn't hear. They're taping up his ear holes. They've got all kinds of stuff. And yet somehow they figured out a way to end up winning that game at the end.
The amount of poise that he showed, the amount of calm that he showed. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he's freaking out there and if he's clearly rattled, everybody sees that. Everybody else starts to panic, but he kept, there was some California cool there about him that I think allowed everybody to settle down and handle what was, I mean, you never seen anything like that. Now, is it true? Cause I heard talk about this. That literally it gets so loud that if I'm lined up next to you on the offensive line, we are like literally face mask to face mask looking at each other and trying to communicate and we can't hear each other?
Yes.
It's that loud?
Oh, yeah. Screaming. Like you just you try to time the snap count because the quarterback turns his head from side to side. So he goes, blue 80. And then he switches the other way, blue 80. And like when he switches the opposite way, there's no way in the world. So you're looking at him and when he goes blue 80, the first time you're peeking up at his lips and you're like, okay, I'm on that blue 80. Then from that point on, you lose it as he turns the other side because you couldn't hear the blue 80. You just watch him say it, right? And then he turns the other side and you're timing it. Like, so you're going in your head, blue 80, blue 80. So ha, ha. Like, so you're just trying to, like as an offensive lineman, you're just trying to, because you can't hear it. You can't hear anything. It's miserable. Absolutely miserable. And to stay as poised as they were able to stay, sometimes you break the huddle, you don't know what the huddle call is. You can't hear him talk in the huddle. And then you're walking up the line of scrimmage shouting at each other. You're like, what do we got? What do we got? Like, that's the way it is.
And to have to do all that and then go out and instinctively play.
Right.
Because you're immediately on your heels, everything. You're thinking so much. Your mind is going to get in the way of everything, but yet they were able to put it all behind them. A lot of respect for the way that they handled that situation yesterday. A lot of respect for the way they handled how difficult that whole environment was. This one comes in from Jay. Guys, I wish overtime in the playoffs was a full quarter. It's the playoffs after all. OT victories in the NFL leave me feeling kind of dirty, like a 1990s streetwalker on Colfax. Wow. Is this Denny Nagel?
That's not
too soon.
Yeah, it's too soon.
Too soon.
You can't do that.
Can't do that.
No, that's not nice.
Well,
I don't have any problem with. I don't have any problem.
Don't do the crime then.
I don't have any problem with the overtime.
There isn't that part of you that says after 60 minutes of just knock down, leave it all out on the field. Blood, sweat, and tears football, that you lose a coin flip and never get a chance to touch the ball again?
We went to Buffalo. Remember the snow-in game where we got snowed in, we couldn't get there, and then we tried to change the time, and that game went to overtime, and Mike Shanahan elected to kick off to Buffalo in overtime, play defense with the wind, got a stop, they punt us, and we end up winning that game. It's complementary football, man. It's offense, defense, and special teams. You do realize that, right?
I do realize that.
Okay, good. Just because it's a team.
But each team did have the ball in that overtime you're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a strategy, but the strategy worked out, but both teams still had the ball.
Mm-hmm. And one team's defense stood up, got a stop. The other team's defense didn't. Complete football.
But how was it determined that that team had to be out on defense and their defense didn't make a play? How was that determined?
I'm not sure what the question is.
You darn well know what the question is.
Hmm.
Why was it? So you're saying, okay, the defense should have made a play. Kansas City has nothing to complain about because they gave up 3 third-and-10s.
75-yard drive.
3 third-and-10s on the way.
3 third-and-10s on the way.
You're right. And your argument is, hey, the defense should have made a play. But what determined that defense was on the field and was put in a position where they had to make a play?
A coin flip. Yeah. Been done that way since the dawn of time.
Well, a lot of things have been done a long way for a long time, and then we decide that it could be done better.
Okay. I don't know about done better, done differently. You want to see Patrick Mahomes touch the ball.
I think after 60 minutes of football with a berth to the Super Bowl on the line, both teams should at least have a chance to handle the football. Yeah. I'm not saying it's perfect. I hate the college football way of overtime. You go to overtime and it's a 27-27 game, and then you look up six overtimes later and it's, you know, a 73-72 monstrosity. You know, I don't want that. But there's got to be a way to come up with a system where there's a feeling of equity there.
Maybe we should just line up and run 40s. And whoever runs the fastest 40, they win.
All right, you're making jokes here.
Yeah,
I know you are. But can you get a sense? You've been out there, and you, mm-hmm. especially as an offensive guy, have you been in those kind of games where, especially by the time you get to the fourth quarter, you're like, these guys, we know everything that they're trying to do. We figured it out. They can't stop us.
Sure.
Okay, well, then that's what both teams had gotten to. We all understood that whoever won the coin flip, the likelihood was strong that they would go down and score a touchdown. Correct?
Yeah.
Because both teams by that point had figured out what the other guy had been trying to do for four quarters, and they were ready. They had the advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So then what you're saying then is that we had gotten to a point in a game coming off a fourth quarter in which 38 points were scored in the fourth quarter, that it was a strong likelihood that whoever won the coin flip would go down and score and end the game.
And be better. Make a different call. Get off the field on third down.
But you just said that by that point, both teams had figured the other one out. And that the defenses were pretty helpless. Plus tired, all that.
Yeah, well, make a play. Blitz. Do something that you haven't done. Change it up. You know, I mean, what are you going to, you're going to sit there and play man, cover two man? The entire second half, and think that Tom Brady's not going to complete passes. Do something different.
So I will say,
bring a zero blitz.
I will say on those 3rd-and-10 throws, I'm watching some of the highlights right now. I mean, those were unbelievable throws.
The world's greatest American.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to eFirstBank.com/business for more details.